Just starting, and then my eye goes like, we're weird. All right, here's 10 things I would tell the 10-year-ago version of me. So number one is, it's okay to belong. You belong. So backstory, I was watching a talk by Pace Morby. It was an interview from Driven Mastermind. Great, great mastermind if you're not familiar. Highly recommend it. But Pace Morby was on stage. He was being interviewed by Jason Flatley. And one of the things that he said was like the importance of creating content, and specifically that he was always creating content for the 10-year-ago version of himself. I think that's a really good model. Generally, like, you are your avatar, or you 10 years ago, or 5 years ago, or 15 years ago, whatever, is your avatar today. So make content for that person. So that's what I'm doing here. 10 things. Number one, 2013 is the year that I moved back to America from after a year in India. I'm from Denmark, moved to the US in 99, moved back to Denmark, moved to India in 2012 and lived there for a year. And then in 2013, I was able to move back to the States. And I remember feeling so damn not belonging, is what I wanted to say. I remember feeling like I didn't belong in the country and the building. So my wife and I, we got an apartment in this incredible luxury building on Houston and Ludlow Street called The Ludlow. And we had to get like a guarantor, and like, it was complicated. Like, most places wanted us to pay 13 months of rent up front, like a whole year plus a year security deposit in order to even let us move in. So it was really complicated to get an apartment, but this building was willing to work with us, and we found a guarantor, and it cost us an arm and a leg, but we got in. And I remember being in this building, was like, it had a gym and a rooftop and all these things. I was like, and a doorman. And so I'm like, I don't belong. I feel like I don't belong here. Like, I'm not worthy of being in this building. At some point, they're going to find out, dude, you don't belong here. You're not worthy of this shit, right? Of course, that never happened. But that feeling like I didn't belong in the building or in the country was something that tripped me up along. Like, I'm not good enough to be here. That was a big theme for me. So what I wanted to tell that 10-year-old version of me is like, oh, you totally belong. You have no idea how much you belong. You totally belong. You are incredibly valuable, worthy of everything here. So much more than you believe. Like, your self-image is so broken that you look at you and you're like, oh, I'm nothing. But like, if you could see yourself realistically compared to everybody else, or just see yourself as you truly are, you would be blown away by how incredible you are. That's what I would tell my 10-year-ago self. And that's what I want to tell you too. Like, if you could truly see yourself, like, you would blow your own mind away by just how incredible you are. You're pure God essence. At your core, you're pure God essence. You absolutely belong here on earth. You belong anywhere that you want to belong to. And you are so incredibly amazing, worthy, just valuable, phenomenal, creative, powerful, all the things. There's a story that I love, which is, it's from, I think it's from Tara Brach's book, one of her books. All her books are amazing, but I think it's either Radical Self-Acceptance, I think is that one. But where she tells a story of a pastor who is meets with a woman, and this woman is like super down on herself and, you know, talks about all that. And then the pastor notices this photo of a young girl on the dresser. And then he asks her about that. Who's that girl in the dresser? And the woman is like, yeah, it's my daughter. She's my everything. I love her with all my heart. And she's the most incredible person. I'm like pouring out love. And then the pastor says, God has a picture of you on his dresser just like that. God has a picture of you. God has a picture just like that of you on his dresser. This is how God feels about you. This is how it truly is. And so when you're feeling down on yourself, you're feeling like you're not worthy or valuable or belong, or like, for me, it was like, I'm not allowed to take up space from other people who are more worthy. I'm not allowed to breathe the air of people who are more worthy. Like, it's so deep, this wound in me. And when you feel this way, you're neglecting God, the gift that you are. You're not seeing yourself accurately through God's eyes. Like, you are absolutely incredible and worthy of everything that he wants. So that's the number one thing I would tell him. Like I managed to get my first visa denied because I didn't feel like I belonged in the country. So for me, I remember walking along the East River and just like affirming to myself affirmations and like feeling like, okay, I belong here, and like feeling that resistance. So the way that I use affirmations is always I say the thing that I want, and then I notice the resistance that comes up energetically, or the voices, or whatever the resistance takes. And that resistance is what I work with, right? So then you go feel that and heal that. That's a younger version of you. Could be before you're born, or right as you're born, or shortly after you're born, or several years after you're born. Doesn't matter. Connect with that. You don't have to know what time it is either, but just connect with that part of you that feels it. And then just feel that. Like, you know, what we all need when we're in our emotions is we just need someone who can hold a space for us and kind of be there and feel with us. Not like be all down and sad. Like they can just be neutral, happy, but they're opening their hearts to us and they're letting that emotion that we have, you know, come into their bodies, and they help just hold the space for it. That's all we need. And that's all that younger part of us needs too. When we have that feeling that whatever it is that, you know, the hurt that you don't belong, that like whatever, there's a wound there. And when that part of you comes up, you just hold space for it and feel it and open your heart to it. That's all that's needed. It was like I was thinking about like when we criticize ourselves, right? We're one of the ways that I've gone ahead and criticized myself over and over again is that I'm too fat. Yeah, I'm too fat. And my wife is like, dude, you're skinny. I remember the first time we're together and she was like, we woke up and we're in San Francisco in an Airbnb, and she says, like, you're beautiful. And it just like fucked with my mind, because I'm like, what are you talking about? I'm ugly. Like, I'm ugly. You can't tell me I'm beautiful. That's just madness. It's nonsense. But she meant it. And then like slowly over time, it's been like, yeah, you know what? Maybe I'm like actually kind of not so terribly looking. And it's funny how that it's like, it's almost virtuous to have this resistance to ourselves, to criticize ourselves, but it's not. You're criticizing God's work for whatever definition of God you have, right? You're criticizing like who the creator made you to be. There's no virtue in that. It's not a good thing. It's not something to pride yourself on. Just stop doing it. It's not something to, you know, condemn yourself over either. Just stop doing it. Let me see. I feel like there's another story there. It's just about to get. All right. I'll see if it comes back. So damn it. When that happens, it's so hard for me to like let it go, because I know there's something there that was good. Okay. So the second thing I have here, which segues nicely, is there's nothing wrong with using your intellect and your intelligence also. So 10 years ago, I was like very much, like 5 years before that, so that's 15 years ago today, 2008, I had this epiphany of like, I'm here to integrate spirituality and entrepreneurship. And before that, I was so, as a young kid, I felt like I was a very spiritual kid. I felt like I was sensing people. I kind of got a feel for, I could sense what was, when they had a negative reaction, I could feel what was going on behind it and why they were doing it. And I always felt sort of connected to something bigger in life. But then at some point I learned to shut that down and just go all like left brain and focus and mind and intellect. And then in 2008, I started to open up to the spiritual side. I was very resistant to it. I got like into like coaching and kind of psychology in that way, but it's like still very rational. And my mom, I remember a conversation with my mom where she was like, what about the spiritual side? I'm like, bullshit. There's nothing there. But then gradually I opened to it. I was like, oh, you know what? And then I like all in, like super deep, hook, line, and sinker. And then I started to demonize my intellect and my intelligence. I'm very sharp. I won like a math competition in the high school without even trying, and got on the national team. And then I didn't pass on beyond that, but like definitely it's called George Moore. I think it was a Norwegian mathematician or something. dude, I wasn't fucking trying. And I was just like, all right. And they call my name, and I wasn't in the room when they called it. And like, then I went to this national competition in Copenhagen. And so there's some intelligence there. But I felt ashamed of it. I was like almost embarrassed of it. Cause like, oh, I want to be this spiritual person, blah, blah, blah. And, so if I tell 10 year ago me, is like, there's nothing not spiritual about being super bright and intelligent. It's all about you learning to use your mind for the right things and not for the wrong things. Oh, now I know what it was I wanted to say before. All right, so it's Napoleon Hill's Outwitting the Devil, where he talks about how we're controlled by the devil. 98% of people are controlled by the devil when we're caught by these negative thinking patterns. And so that was a big thing for me, just caught in all of those negative patterns. And that feeling unworthy really helped me back. So I'll circle back to that. So anyway, so the using my intelligence, there's nothing wrong with using your intellect and your intelligence. To me, the beautiful thing is when you combine both, that you have that left brain that can do systems and structure and math and all that stuff, and you have the right brain who can go deep into the inner universe or inner world, right? The unconscious world, and connect with people and sense energy and feelings and all of those things, which are critically important too. And a lot of people, most people in this world, are completely ignorant of that world. They're not super smart and intelligent and sharp either. They're just kind of this mush, which is, again, Napoleon Hill talks about in Outwitting the Devil. It's brilliant stuff. So one of my mentors that I really learned this from was Larry Yatch. He's a former Navy SEAL, and he's like artistic and like a little bit on the spectrum, as am I, but I did an intensive with him, which is trauma release. And it's just like he was giving these talks where he was giving, basically, he was reasoning his way to God, which is fascinating to watch. And it was really a healing point for me to see, oh shit, if you reason deeply enough and really think about things, you actually arrive at God. Same as if you use your left brain with enough, you know, focus and intention and clarity of thought, you arrive at God. If you use your right brain, your you know, sensing, feeling side of your brain, you also arrive at God. Isn't that remarkable? Reminds me of there's a TED Talk, Right Mind, what is it called? TED Talk, Right Mind. My Stroke of Insight, Jill Bolte Taylor. She has a phenomenal TED Talk on how the left brain, when the right left brain shuts off, what it feels like. Because she has a stroke, and so left brain is out of capacity for sometimes, like what that feels like is really fascinating. So go watch that video. But it also reminds me Gay Hendricks, who talks about any psychological journey taken deep enough leads to spirituality. So it's like all roads lead to spirituality, lead to God. And so the message for me 10 years ago and for you is like, there's nothing wrong. Like, using your intellect doesn't make you less of a spiritual person. I felt that way, but it's not true. All right, number three, you don't have to police everybody, right? Focus on the people who love you, the people who instantly get what you're about, and forget the rest. Again, according to Napoleon Hill in Outwitting the Devil, 98% of people are in a trance. They are drifters. They are just lost in lack of clarity of thought, in like opinions that have been assigned to them. Like, you're not going to get those people. Don't worry about it. Like, some of them, sure. But you're just never going to please everybody, because most people are just completely out of touch with their own inner world. They're brainwashed. They're a lot, like, maybe not lost souls, but they have the capacity to come back, but it's not up to you. It's too much of a lift for you to do that. So leave them to drift as they will, or be inspired if they will, but don't worry about them. Focus on the people who love you. One of my mentors, Dan Martell, talks about when doing posting to social media is like, do you have friends that like you, right? Like if you do, if you have friends that like you, that means there are people that like you. There are probably going to be other people out there who also like you. And so if you just be yourself on social media and post content, likely chances are you're going to find other people who like you, and that's going to be your audience. There's 8 freaking billion people in the world. You don't need that many of them to have a sustainable business and to have a viable audience and community, and that's all you need. So message, you don't have to please everybody. Focus on the people who love you, who the people who instantly get you, who are easy to work with, fun to hang out with, and forget the rest. You do not need everybody. Pick the ones. There's 8 billion people. Pick the ones that you want. All right. Number 4, you're not wrong. You are not wrong. There's nothing wrong about you. You can be wrong. You can be wrong, have wrong ideas, right? That happens all the time. You're wrong about a bunch of things, but you as a person, as a soul, as a being, you are not wrong. You are correct. It's back to this idea like that and this was me. I felt so fundamentally wrong that I didn't dare put out content because like, oh my God, I'm wrong. And it was like, it was that like wrongness was kind of permeating everything. I was like, when I met someone, I was like, oh shit, like this is great, but like pretty soon they're going to find out that I'm wrong and then they're going to reject me. So I better like pre-reject me ahead of time, right? So like it made it really hard for me to build relationships. Also, when you're so consumed in feeling wrong, it's like your mind is on that and not on them and on the relationship and on the connecting, right? So it's really unhelpful pattern. And so what I want to tell 10-year ago version of me is like, you are not wrong. And this pattern of feeling that we're somehow not enough, we're not enough just as we are, we have to be something different from who we are, is something that everybody has. Everybody has this pattern. Everybody has this core pattern of inadequacy. And Peter Krohn talks about this brilliantly, which I love. Like any podcast, any video of his, he talks about it greatly. But basically what happens is that we grow up and at first we have no self-concept, right? So we're like, ah, I just am. Like, wah, wah, cry, like get food, whatever, like poop, all this stuff, right? But then at some point when we start to have language and understanding, and then we get the feeling like, oh, just being me wasn't good enough. Something happens where it's like, you know, stop doing like that. Stop saying that. Stop being this way. Stop like, go do this, go do that. Like some our parents or someone in school teacher, or whatever, tells us that we have to be something other than who we are. And that moment is the moment that wedge, that gap starts opening inside of us that says, here's who I truly am. And that's not good enough. And here's how I need to be. And I need to work hard to be that person. Problem is, I am not that person. And the way that we try to become that person is by punishing ourselves. So we're punishing the version of us that we truly are. And this becomes the core pattern of inadequacy or self-hate. Another phenomenal book is Cherry Hooper's There Is Nothing Wrong With You. I've read that book many, many times, and I'll get to that. Well, maybe not. It's not actually on my list. Let me get to that now. The reason that I'll talk about why that didn't click for me and what changed it. But that pattern of feeling wrong somehow is something that we all have. So what I want for you is to identify that pattern, because as long as you have that pattern, it's going to run your life. And you're never going to be, enough for the pattern, because it's a pattern that is learned behavior that like, oh, I have to punish myself and then I get better. And then, but then you're gonna like, as you punish yourself, you feel like, oh, now I'm doing something good because I'm getting better. It's like unconscious, like your unconscious is learning the punishment mechanism. So it's gonna keep doing the punishment mechanism. And it'll always move the goalposts so that it has something to punish you over. And so it's only going to break when you break it. You're never going to hit that like milestone, that goalpost where now I'm not wrong anymore. Or now I'm not, too dumb or too fat or too stupid or too, poor or too whatever it is that your particular pattern, your unconscious mind got programmed with. It's never going to happen. Yeah. And this pattern of feeling wrong really tripped me up. And so in all areas of life. And the way it was held in place, even though I knew it was happening, the way it was held in place was because I was afraid of what would happen if I didn't have it. It was like, it was when I tuned into it. And I remember doing this actually 10 years ago. We were actually this is like 12 years ago. Before moving to India, we were on Moonlight Beach in a motel in California in Encinitas and practicing yoga at the Joyce Studio in Encinitas, which is no more. I was back there recently, checked it out. It's not there anymore. But it was like, if I imagine myself actually believing in myself, not feeling wrong, all that stuff, it felt like I was in free fall. It felt like I was in free fall and there's no safety net and it was so scary. That was the feeling. I can feel it now. All right. And what I only realized this year was that it was really that when I felt into what life would be like if I had the success that I wanted, I felt this giant knot in my stomach that I was like, oh, that's like, no, you can't do that, right? Like, it's like you're breaking all of the patterns of how it's like in our family. This is not who we are. This is not how we do things. Like, we don't succeed in everything. It's really crazy because my parents taught me, I have this as well. Let's talk about it. I'll rearrange my bullets here so then we can go in order. Yeah, this is good. Yeah. So my parents were very focused on success. Like, are you successful? I just remember in my mom's garden and like some family members that she has in Canada came visiting. And one of them was like, yeah, and I wrote this book. And she was like, oh, was the book very successful? And the friends were like, she was like, that depends on how you define success. Like, I really enjoyed writing it and I'm really proud of the work. Has it sold a lot? No. Like, but to me, success was actually writing it and getting to a few people who would love it. Something like that. I forget the details. But that, like, but it's like that focus on like, was it successful? At my wedding, when I got married to my first wife, the table that my mom sat at, like, I had for like reasons, among them feeling wrong, I didn't actually have my parents sit at the main table. So my mom was sitting at the table and then she started introducing everybody else around that table. It was like, oh, and here's this person and he's successful because he's doing this and that and the other thing. And then this person is successful because of this, that, and the other. And then she went around the table and then she hit up, she got to my friend Ulf and she said, and Ulf, he's just Ulf. And it hurt him so bad, it stung so bad because at that point he was going through a transition in his career where he'd been studying biology and he realized like, I can get my degree. He was literally at the thesis and a 5-year study. He's like, I can finish my degree and go out and be, you know, unemployed because there's no freaking good jobs for biologists, or I can change careers and just start over in IT. And he did. He went to IT University in Copenhagen, started over. But he had a family, he had a wife, and he couldn't support them. And his wife's parents were supporting them through this period, plus her job. And it made him feel so inadequate as a man. And then my mom just being like, oh, all these other people are successful, but Ulf is just Ulf. He was like a knife in his heart. And my mom didn't mean any offense, of course. All good there. But that like mindset of like, you know, oh, look, these people are successful. These people are successful. But then also at the same time, if you're too successful, that's wrong too. So the pattern that got ingrained in me is like, it's wrong to not be successful and you should really punish yourself for that. But it's also very wrong to be too successful. And you also need to punish yourself for that. So that you can see how that created like a very good middle of the road kind of thing. And I think both of them are wrong, right? It's not wrong to not be successful. It's not helpful, right? I think everybody has the potential. Everybody's capable of being extremely successful in all areas of life, health, wealth, and relationships. And I think everybody should. And it's my mission to support everybody in getting there. But it's not wrong to not be successful. Like we all start in some place and we do the work and then we get there, right? But it's also not wrong to be too successful. There is no such thing as being too successful. Success is not like, oh, like I remember visiting Encinitas Cafe in Encinitas, or Swami Cafe rather, and being afraid that people thought I was rich. Like, it's totally cool to be rich and successful and happy and have great relationships and have great health. And like, I think the more that you do, the more just generous and loving you become. The other night we were I was in Orlando last week for Funnel Hacking Live. I should do a video about Funnel Hacking Live and everything I learned, actually. I was at Funnel Hacking Live last week, and one of the nights, my friend Daniel Pompa, who's also a member of Simplero, very successful dude, he organized a dinner, and we were probably like 20, 25 people. One of them is this incredible guy named Steve Harwart, and he was like, why don't we all contribute $1,000 to a tip jar, and then we tip these people that run this restaurant, $10,000 or something, whatever it amounts to, at the end of the night. And I was like, that's a great fucking idea. So I chipped in $1,000 and, excuse me. Yeah, so I thought it was a great idea. I was, at first I was like, oh shit, I could feel that. So like, oh, that's a little bit out of my comfort zone. But I was like, no, it felt like the right thing to do. And so I chipped in $1,000 and we gave them, it ended up being 6,500, which I was kind of surprised about, because like there were literally like 25 very successful people there. And so apparently a lot of them didn't kind of feel like that. So I think like half of that was like, I'm sure Daniel threw in 1,000, Steve threw in 1,000, I did. But then there's like 3,500 amongst all the others. No blame, no shame. Like everybody does what they're capable of. But I remember Dan Kennedy talking about giving, consistently giving, is one of the fastest ways to success, to receiving. And tipping is a great way to do that. So I always tip generously, and I just think of it as like putting money into my recoup all the rewards bank account, if you will. And so, yeah, I was like, $1,000, fuck it, let's go, let's do it. And so my point here is that when people are very successful and they do all this inner work and they build up themselves, and then like, and that's part of success to me. Success is not just the financial or the fame or anything. Success is like really truly inner success, right? Being truly yourself, being, you know, closing that gap and getting back to who you truly are. That's success to me. And the more you are, the more generous you're naturally going to be. All right, that's how that works. All right, so yeah. All right, that was number five. Number six is don't buy into, just to tie the knot on the feeling wrong. So what I realized this year was that the reason why I kept feeling wrong, even though I knew sort of better, I'm gonna need to take this off, was that it served the purpose of making sure I wasn't too successful, because I had so much resistance towards being too successful, because I felt like that made me a really bad person, right? That then I would be betraying my family. That's not how we do it here. We're not just successful. I would lose all the love in the world. And mind you, I actually had an experience kind of like that. So in 2008, when I got into online marketing and started studying Dan Kennedy and mindset and all these things, and I sold stuff and I made money and I started teaming up with some of the top people in this world in Denmark, and we made bank together and changed lives, and it was amazing. And then I started to feel wrong. And like one of my good friends in the tech world, he pulled up one of my sales letters and he said, Calvin, is this you? This is like, ugh. This is like, I hate that. Like, I'm like, and then I started feeling really ashamed about it. I felt so ashamed. It really helped shut me down. And I lost a bunch of friends who were like, we don't recognize you anymore. You don't like, I like the version of you that you used to be. I don't like this new version of you. And meanwhile, I was like closing the gap and getting closer to myself. And they were telling me, you know what? We like the fake version of you that's not really you a lot better. It freaking hurt. It really hurt. And so the next item here is don't buy into the resistance from other people, right? If you feel that you're getting more yourself. And that doesn't mean you don't make mistakes. Like, it's like you're going to overcorrect and you're going to do some shit, but like, that's fine. Don't buy into the resistance from other people. They're going to resist your changes. That's just how that works. When you start to become more of who you are and become more successful, you're going to lose friends. You are. Just like if you have a group of friends that you are drinking buddies and you stop drinking, well, some of those are going to fall away and some of them are going to stay. And you have no control over who stays and who goes. If you have a group of, you're overweight and you have a group of friends that you go out and eat like fatty brunches every other day or whatever, and you start taking your health seriously and you start eating healthy and eating less and losing weight and exercise and all that shit, then those people are going to, some of them are going to fall away, right? Because they didn't like you. They liked your facade and they liked your company in their misery, right? That's what they liked. It wasn't you. And so we have no control over who is going to stay and who's going to go. And don't get attached to that shit. Like, the resistance, take that as evidence that you're doing the right thing, that you're doing your work. And then you're, for every friend that you lose, you're going to make two more that actually freaking care, that actually love you, that actually want to get to know the real you and is cheering for the real you, not the fake facade that serves their ego bullshit purposes. Yeah. So do not buy into the resistance from other people. So when this guy showed me the sales letter and he was like, oh, this is really, I'm like, I don't fucking care. People love this shit. I'm changing lives. Yeah, the tone, you might not like the tone. And so what? Like, I'm trying this tone out because I'm learning from people and I'm like, all right, let me just do what the fuck they say and see if it works. And it does. It did. It fucking worked, right? So maybe you have issues with the tone. I don't give a crap because you're not my audience. These people whose lives I'm changing are the audience. If you have a problem with that, get the fuck out of my life. I don't care. Like, shut up. Like, or like, don't sabotage me. I saw a video yesterday from Alex Hormozi where he talks about like his friends. If you're not rooting for me, you're not a friend. It's like, not three strikes, you're out, you're gone. If you're not cheering for my success, if you're talking about my back, about like your resentment and shit, like, you're out. I think that's a great fucking attitude to have. That doesn't mean that you can't still have compassion for people that reject you, because you know what they're going through. And it's just like they're coming up against their own internal, like assigned opinions, basically, right? In Outwitting the Devil, he talks about like clarity of thought is, you know, and factual thinking, accurate thinking is the number one thing that roots out the devil. And something that I realized when I did a deep dive into politics some years ago, and it's a fascinating world. And one of the key things I learned is that tribal thinking, quote unquote thinking, or tribal assigned opinions, most of the time outweighs, like from 98% of people, strongly outweighs actual thinking. Most people don't think. Most people don't know what thinking is. Like, literally, like 98% of people do not know what the hell thinking is. They've never tried it. They've never experienced it. They think that thinking is like something about their feelings or expressing like half-baked opinions that they got from somewhere. They think that's thinking. It's not. Thinking is hard work. It's, you sit down, you actually reason about stuff. You use your factuals. It's actually kind of physically a little bit uncomfortable to do, which is why most people don't do it. And so those people who resist you, like, there's people belong to tribes, right? We're a group of people. We see the world this way and we watch the same TV channels or the same influencers and we believe the same things. And this is our tribe and this is who we are. And we're defined in large part by our opinions. And so if you start to think for yourself and you're like, is that true? Do I really believe that? Maybe I don't. Maybe could there be another version? That's why you see like demonizing of certain sources of information. Like, oh no, this is like Fox News is dangerous. Like, whatever that was back in the day. But these different sources or people or whatever, like you're not even allowed to listen to them, because that alone makes you betray your tribe. Because if you did, you might realize, oh my God, they actually have some good points here. And that might start you thinking, and we can't have that. Because most people are going to be tribe first. And so if you say something, if they come up against the fact that actually contradicts what their tribe says, well, they're going to abandon the tribe before they start actually, they're going to stick with the tribe and abandon the facts. The vast majority of people, because the switching costs are just too high. Shit, what if I actually saw this and I agree with it, right? What if I heard this fact and I really took it in and I reasoned and I realized that that's true? What else might I be wrong about over here? Oh my God, that's scary. Because now it's the tribe. It's your entire safety in the world, right? All the people that you hang out with, your social safety net. And like, think back in the day, right? Where thousands and thousands of years ago, where we lived in the savannah and whatever, if you were not part of a tribe, you would get fucking eaten by the wolves, right? You would die. I have some past life memories that have come up where I was like I was that medicine man that spoke truth, and I was kicked out of the tribe and I died a miserable death, just like out in the wilderness, and got eaten and beaten and whatnot. Like there's pirates, there's animals, there's all kinds of things that are going to kill you. And you don't want to be alone out there, especially not as a medicine man. Like you maybe not a good hunter or whatever. So when you start to change, there's going to be resistance from other people. Don't buy into it. Do not buy into it. Just recognize that it's their resistance to truth. To truth, not to your truth, but to truth. To me, it's always about like, that's, I think I'm still on LinkedIn. I'm like, my short name is Calvin Truth, or True Calvin. But like, I came up with this, and this was in around that time in 2011. It's like, I'm the truth barometer. Like, I'm a heat seeking missile for the truth. I want to know the truth. I don't fucking care. I want to know the truth always. And that's, I think, is a very, very unique thing that sets me apart from a lot of people. And it's something to cherish, because most people just don't give a fuck about the truth. They just want whatever makes them feel comfortable and safe, right? And the devil does a lot of that. He's very good at giving people what makes them feel good in the moment, but hurts them in the long term. So, point number six, do not buy into the resistance from other people. It's just their, you know, undigested, signed opinions and tribal BS and their self-protection, right? Like, opinions become so aligned with our identity. Opinions become part of our identity. So when someone starts to attack your opinions, when someone starts to attack your opinions, you feel that it's your identity that's threatened, and you start to push back and get defensive, right? It's a very strong mechanism in people. So you never want to go there. Like, that's a whole other conversation about like how you actually change people's beliefs and opinions, which is hard. You do it with telling stories. Telling stories is how you kind of get beyond that. But facts are never going to do it. It's the number one mistake that everybody makes on X and like arguing online. It's like they try to argue with facts. I've made that mistake many times. Right, because I love the logic of it and the system. I construct those in my mind, but they don't convince anyone. It's the stories that do. Stories are the only thing that is persuasive, that can actually change beliefs and those assigned opinions. And I differentiate about opinions, which are just like BS shit that people make up, and views, which are backed by, you know, you have reasoned yourself to a view. Like, this is my view, and it's based on this data. I can show you the data to back up my view. And if you challenge some of the data and I get better data, I'm going to change my view. That's how I operate. I don't operate in opinions. Opinions in my mind are just like shit that I've heard or picked up or whatever, blah, 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 blah. And I just regurgitate that shit. Nobody cares. I mean, everybody loves doing it, but it has zero value to me. What I want is views, points of view that are based in reason. All right, there's a ladder that I can follow step by step to get to that point of view, and this is why. And it's subject to change in light of better information. All right, number seven, try shit, see what works, what feels right. It's okay to make mistakes. So I got into this online marketing world, and I was very skeptical, because I felt like a lot of the people in this world were were kind of full of crap, and turned out that they were. They felt like scammy, internet marketing-y, like all that kind of stuff, right? All the cliches, and turns out it was absolutely right. There's a blog at one point called Salty Robot. Salty Robot. I don't know if it's still, you know, active, but I read that like the Bible. And he would expose all of these people, a lot of them like scammers, like weird ass, like it's like, and a lot of them I'm sure are good intentioned and well-meaning and all that stuff, but like a lot of like really wacky, crazy stuff. And I've always had that. Like, if the law of attraction is so great, why the fuck do you have to sell me $1,000, $2,000, $10,000 course on the life of the law of attraction? Like, just give it away for free and use the law of attraction to like make a shit ton of money some other way, right? And I think there's validity to that. And I also think there's validity actually like helping people. I think that's fine. But there's definitely a lot of like LOA, law of attraction stuff, that's all about like selling people the dream that if you just like visualize it, it will happen. It won't, right? And they all kind of say that, but they still kind of buy into that dream of people, and they don't mind people buying it even though they are deluded about this fact. And that's what bothers me, right? It's like, we need to be fucking honest. Like, if it's okay in the marketing to be, I mean, it's not okay to not be honest, but it's okay in the marketing to obviously be selective about what you highlight. Like, you don't want to do an ad that's like, here's the 10 things we suck at. I mean, it might actually work great. Actually, I'm going to try it now. Like, run an ad like, here's the five things we absolutely suck at, and this is what we're doing to fix them, and here's like a couple things that we're actually great at. So, might be worth trying. Who the fuck knows? There's this movie called Crazy People, which I highly recommend, which talks about people. It's an ad man who kind of goes crazy, quote unquote, by actually telling the truth. Like, Volvos, they're boxy but safe. Jaguars for men who want hand jobs from ladies they don't even know. Like, let's like tell the fucking truth. Like, Greece, we're not as snobby as the French. It's like, it's really funny, and I think there's so much value to that, so much truth in that. It's just tell the damn truth in your ads and let people make up their own minds, right? You want the people who love you for who you are and who love your shit for what it is. But yeah, I got into it. I felt like they're all scammy, and then I got like very afraid of that. I remember having dinner with Gary Vee in 2010 up here on the Upper East Side at a place called Flex Muscles, like a muscle seafood restaurant. It was like, basically he had been speaking at some online marketing event around that time in 2009, right as I was getting into that world. And I had these qualms about that world. It's like, icky, I'm not really sure. Do I want to be part of this? Like, can I trust these people? Are they okay people, or are they not, right? Are they scammers? I don't want to be part of like a scammy group and shady shit. Like, this is just not my jam. And so the fact that he was on stage, and I just knew that he was totally legit, right? He's like one of the good guys. He still is, like 13 years later. So that dinner really made an impression, because what he told me was that, like, don't do that shit. It's wrong. And had I known what kind of stage that was, what kind of room that was, I wouldn't have said yes to that speaking gig. But he was just getting started on his speaking career. He didn't know better. So he would never have said yes. And what I would say to myself is, just try shit, see what works, what feels right. It's okay to make mistake. If you know that your heart is the right place, that you have integrity, that you're always going to make right to do right by your customers, and you're willing to look at yourself and work through your issues, then it's okay. Just do shit and see what works. It's okay to make mistakes. Like, yeah, it's okay. Just every day set out the intention to do good work and do better and reach more people in a better way. Like, you're going to be fine. Like, for me, that feeling wrong and flawed, the fact that I'm willing to consider that I'm wrong is a great gift. Just don't use it against yourself if you have that. A lot of people have that feeling, fundamentally flawed, right? And on some level, we all are. And on some level, we're not. But if the fact that you're willing to consider that you're wrong is a great gift, just don't abuse it. Don't abuse it to where you're constantly knocking yourself down. It's great to be able to question, was that the right thing? What was my motive here? Is there something I can learn from this? How can I do better, right? That's great. Don't freaking overdo it. Don't destroy yourself in the process. Try shit, see what works. It's okay to make mistakes. We all do. Nobody learns to walk without freaking falling, yeah? And then when you make mistakes, just make it right. Make it right. Apologize and make it right. Apologize for making, just own it. Fuck, egg on my face. I suck. That's terrible. I'm so sorry. Totally fucked up. Own it. Apologize and then make it right. And when you do that, you win people for life, right? If you don't do that, I had something happen. I don't know if I should mention names, but there's a very well-known, you know, online marketing firm, mastermind. They have masterminds. They do events, all that kind of stuff. And there's an event that I bought into for $15,000 that was completely misrepresented. They promised all kinds of things, very specifically too, and none of it happened. And I went after it and I confronted them. I said, hey, like, I bought this for 15 grand. You said this and this and this, and like none of that stuff happened. Like, what do you say? And he did not say, I'm sorry, we fucked up. That was the only thing I needed. I just needed them to say, hey, I'm sorry, we screwed up. I'll make sure that that doesn't happen again. I'll check with our procedures, our processes, figure out how that went wrong, make sure it doesn't happen again. That's all I wanted. I didn't need my money back. I didn't need anything, because like I'd gotten plenty of worth from just prepping for this event, from just looking forward to it, thinking about it, all that stuff. But that's not what happened. There was zero remorse, zero apology. Instead, it was like, what if I give you this other thing instead? And so I was like, all right, screw it, let's do that. So I became a client, I became a customer, I actually ended up paying them, you know, an additional, like, I don't know, what, how much? 30, 60, like 85 grand or something over time. So they got a lot more money out of me. So like a total of 100K they got out of me. But zero trust. I'll take what I can and it's okay, but zero trust, all right? Yeah, you showed me you're not trustworthy. So if you do the opposite of that and you just actually own it and apologize and then actually fix it and mean it, right? We will do with my team when we fuck up. We had someone the other day where their domain, because of some changes we'd made to custom domains, and then the way they'd set it up, where it, like, you know, with www in front or without www, is like it's like different, but technically it's very different to do a subdomain versus a root domain. And so we'd made some changes to make that better, but something went wrong with the way that they had set it up. And so over the weekend they had a 13-hour period in the middle of the launch where their domain was out of commission. And it was to a large extent our part, because one of our engineers went and made a change that actually made it then break 2 days later over the weekend, because he didn't understand how it was the recent change to how we operated. And it only happened, then it stops working during the weekend, and then it takes us 13 hours to figure it out and get it fixed, because it's over the weekend. All the engineers are gone. It didn't get escalated. We can escalate the engineers like this, but it didn't get escalated. And I was like, dude, this is like if we, when we, like the, we can't, no, there's no, like, we have to have a like super rock solid escalation. So anyway, so what I did was I conducted an after action review where we got everybody together and we're like, what was the breakdown? And what are the SOPs that we need to do to fix this? Right? We don't need to blame anybody. We just need to fix the system so it doesn't happen again. And that's what we did, communicated with a client. Like, I'm so sorry. We totally fucked up. I understand this is terrible. You're in the middle of the launch. Custom domain goes down, like, it's, and you don't get it resolved in so many hours. Like, it's 1,000% our fault. Like, we suck. Like, we need to do better. Here's what I'm doing. We're doing this after action review. Here are the SOPs that we're going to change to make sure this never happens again. And we've done those changes, right? So same thing here is like, you try shit and some of it you're like, felt a little icky. Some of the ickiness is just you getting out of your comfort zone. That's okay. Some of the ickiness is like, this is like not, this is like a value of mine. Like, no, this is not how I am. This is not who we are, right? So you need to learn to tell the difference, but you have to stretch yourself out of the comfort zone. And sometimes you're going to stretch yourself out to do things that you're like, eh, no, not my jam, not something I want to repeat. Totally fine. You tried it. It's great. No problem. No fault. All right. Number eight, just because we're going long here. Just because other people in the online marketing world suck and are full of shit and have no integrity doesn't mean that you have to reject that world wholesale. So again, I got into that world. Turns out they're all full of shit. And then I, like a little kid, I was like, I packed up my toys and I was like, I'm not going to be like, fuck you all. I'm just going to go do like write code again. And that was the devil getting a hold of me. That was the devil getting in, like using that wedge of other people's criticism and my fear of success and my fear of being left all alone and being kicked out of the tribe and all of those different things to like, let me grab a hold of this guy and like just double down on feeling wrong and all that shit and just go back into my little cave. Because I had broken out. Like I kind of got really good at programming. I believe that every great programmer is an emotionally broken person. The way that you get to be a really good programmer is that you're emotionally broken in some way. And then, so part of our job is to break out of that. And literally as a kid, I would hide in my cave with my computer or my comics or my books or whatever. Like in school, I would get beaten by some of the older boys that had me as their favorite target. And so I hid in the library where they couldn't get to me. And there was like these pillows. And I remember that like area, just lie there and read. In all the breaks, because like I felt safe in there as my little cave that I could be in. And like the computer became part of that little cave, and like I'm not getting out to people and just staying here in my little cave. And that's kind of what I did after that pushback. I just retreated back into my cave and I was like, okay, I'm just gonna do software and customer service and all the things and like not be out there doing the masterminds, doing the teaching. Even though I loved it, I felt so good doing it, but I just it smacked me and I felt so wrong. And then I just retreated. It was like, so like, it really took that wound that I'd just started to get out and just like made it like 10 times worse. And the devil really moved in there and took fucking control. So the lesson here is like, just cause other people suck and just cause some other people, and by suck, I mean have no integrity and like don't mean what they say. And like they lie and do all kinds of shit, and then they're so many of the prosperity teachers and abundance teachers are, when you get to know them, extremely scarcity minded, right? 25 people at dinner at this incredible family restaurant that like, and then they're too fucking stingy to contribute to like a life-changing tip to these people. Anyway, and I'm, again, not blaming them, but just like realize that the so many people are out of integrity, which again, Napoleon Hill would say they're controlled by the devil. They're controlled by the devil. The devil sows the seeds of fear and doubt and greed and lust and all these things in us. And then he runs us, right? We become drifters. We start to drift more and more. And then we enter into this hypnotic habit land. And that's when he really got us. And that's, again, 98% of people. So you don't have to reject everything in that world wholesale. You can take all the good parts and reject all the bad parts. And sometimes you're going to try some of the bad parts and you think they're good parts. You realize they're bad parts and you're going to do them again. It's fine. Like, take what you can and just be better and you will absolutely win and crush it. Most people are fucking idiots and assholes and they suck. So if you just come at it with this integrity and an open heart and a bit of intelligence and giving a damn, dude, do you have any idea how much giving a damn is a freaking competitive advantage? Because most people don't give a fuck. Most people don't give a fuck. We make the stuff that we make now at Simplero for software is so much better than anyone out there, because I give a fuck about the user experience and the use of the app. I use my software every day. I know what sucks and I know what's great and I know what it needs to become to be fucking phenomenal. And that's what we're building. I only hire engineers who give a fuck about writing good code, doing it in a way that's clean and maintainable and sustainable and easy to read and understand and extend. Like, Like, most people just don't give a fuck. They just don't care enough. So if you take all the best parts of all the online marketing world and the business advice and all that shit, and you just be better, you will crush it. And I saw this talk from Pace Morby, and like the love that he pours into his community every single day, he just loves more on them and gets everybody to take other stuff off his plate so he can just love more in his community. I think that's fucking brilliant. I'm gonna steal that right out of his playbook, and I'm sure he won't mind, right? So if you do that, you're gonna win. Do not reject all that stuff wholesale. Do not take to heart all the fucking critics, right? I had my good friend here last night, Simon, who has a speakeasy restaurant. It's like a private event in a loft. That's very cool. I was there for dinner a couple nights ago. I'm definitely going to do it again. Elevated German Cuisine. It's chef-simon.com. Go check it out. Buy tickets if you're in New York, or if you're visiting New York, you want to do this. It's amazing. It's an incredible experience. He's worked at Nomad, the number one restaurant in the world. He's a really world-class fucking chef, and he's just a good person. And we're talking about how making his website. If you go check it out now, it's very hard to figure out how to book a reservation, actually. And moreover, like, you're not going to go alone, right? So you need to coordinate with some friends, and so you're probably not going to be ready to book in that moment. So what I said to him to do is change it so it becomes an opt-in. Enter your name and email, and then you can see the dates and the options for you to choose from, because then we can follow up with people, because they're just not going to buy in that first instant. And so chances are they're going to completely forget and not come back. So let's get their name and email, and then do a non-buyer follow-up sequence to people that the ones they opt in, we start sending them those emails. And then the moment they actually buy, we take them off of that list. All right. So that's what we want to do. And what was I saying? So he was concerned about, hey, are people in this world, are they going to feel like, no, this is like not how we do it in the restaurant business? Like, you never have to say your name and email, just as the menu and the date, and like the book and whatnot. Like, I'm like, no, but this is different, right? And you being different is going to set you apart. I forget who this is, but I keep hearing the story of a comic, stand-up comic, who just consistently over the years started collecting emails from every single audience that he performed in front of. And every single chance he got, he built his audience, he built his email list. And now he has, you know, I don't know, like lots and lots of people in his email list. And he has this incredible power that wherever he shows up, there's going to be a fucking crowd. So do you think he's going to be in demand to book at these clubs? Of course he is, right? It's such a master move, and nobody in the restaurant industry does this. Like, I'm telling Simon, like, start building that audience that loves you and loves your food right now. Every time you're out, build your email list, right? When you're catering private events, build your email list, get people on your list. So now you can send them to, like, when you're doing a pop-up, you're doing your next speakeasy, you're doing whatever gig or whatever, so that's open to the public, you can draw a crowd, and that becomes part of your draw now. Like, that becomes part, a big part of your value as a chef, is that you can direct attention. It's amazing. And don't give a fuck that other chefs might have a problem with it, or other people in the industry. They don't know what they're talking about. Are they going to buy your shit or not? Are they going to hire you or not? Chances are they're still going to hire you. Or if they're not, they're not worth having around. So don't worry about those people. All right. A couple more here. Number 9, it's okay to want to make money. It's okay to want to make money. Again, okay, so this was really deep for me. I was a month and a half ago. I was back in Copenhagen for a week or so. And what I really, on the way there, I was like on the flight, on the way, I was like trying to think back, like, what was it? Like, I started Simplero in 2009, and had I known what I know today, it would already be like well over $100 million in annual recurring revenue. I would have tons of money. I would have a private jet, which is totally on my list, because fuck, I hate flying commercial. I love going places and meeting people. I would have a private jet. I would be at least $100 million, if not $200, $300 billion annual recurring revenue, if I knew what I know today. And that's always how it is. And I have no regrets. I'm not, you know, sulking over it, nothing. But I am looking at it. It's funny because I told it to one of my spiritual teacher I was working with. And she was like, well, even asking that question is going like, no, fuck no. Like, she was like, that's like not spiritual or whatever. I'm like, no, totally. I want to dissect and analyze because I want to be able to teach this to other people. And I want to be able to make sure that I don't continue down that path, right? So I analyzed it. I looked inside myself, like, what was the core thing that kept me stuck? And it was really that I didn't feel like I was worthy of having the money and having the attention. I wasn't worthy. And so I had this pattern of like, as soon as I get money, I have to like throw it away at something. I have to do something with it to make it go away so I don't have too much money, because unconsciously I was committed to not having a lot of money. So the more money kept streaming in, the more I had to get rid of it somehow. And that was the unconscious programming. And so the message to you and to my 10-year-old younger self is, it's okay to want to make and have money. You should have money. You should have a lot of money. Just save it, store it away, invest it in safe long-term things. You should absolutely have a big cushion of money. You're worth it. Make that a goal. Make that part of your definite purpose. Napoleon Hill talks about the definiteness of purpose, knowing exactly what you want and being very clear about it. This visit to Funnel Hacking Live made it very clear to me that what I want is, I want to be a leader of entrepreneurs who operate with smarts and hearts and integrity, right? From logical reasoning, mind, clarity of thought, accuracy of thought, and heart, solar plexus, power, connectedness to spirit, to God, with integrity, right? Those are the people that I want to lead. And I want to create a million strong movement of entrepreneurs who get out of drifting and get back into being a non-drifter, get into being a non-drifter, and then start to create their own life and impact other people's lives through this incredible vehicle of entrepreneurship. That is my mission. That's what I want to create. And I saw that. I saw the event. I saw what Russell has done, and it's fucking phenomenal. He's created this incredible movement, and he's educated them. He's given so much value to people, and he keeps doing that. It's incredible. His vibe is so much different from mine. His vibe and his energy is so much different from mine. There's constantly that feeling of like, it's a little bit sleazy. I talked to some people after the offer, and it's like, there's that sleazy vibe. I don't like it. I don't think it's necessary. I think it convinces the gullible people that are easily manipulated, and I don't know that it gets them out of that state. I would rather do free content to get people out of that state and sell people who are more likely to have success. It's back to the what if you could only get paid when people actually have success and get the results that you're delivering, that you're promising, right? Those are the people that I want primarily. We're gonna get some others, that's fine. But those are the people that I want to focus on. So, and I want to get people really centered in their hearts and their solar plexus and use their mind to really think. Like that combination, that triad, that to me is what I want to do. But it was great to have that role model and see, oh my God, what he's done, that's what I want to do, but in a different vibe, with a very different vibe, right? So it's okay to have money and to pursue that. It's a lot of people, I think, have been burned out on goals and rah-rah, and we got to do blah, 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 right? And you kind of lose yourself. You lose that solar plexus. You lose the heart. You don't have to. Like, you can stay centered in your heart, in your solar plexus, in your spirit, and then go for that power. So you haven't just become like, rah-rah, we got to do, like where you're kind of like coming out of yourself and like up there. No, it's in here, and you're just like, all right, clarity, definiteness of purpose, believe in yourself. I should put that on the list, like believing yourself, honestly. But I'll do that some other day. Yeah. But that energy of like much more like, using that power, that just God power, creative life force, sexual energy power, that comes from inside, and that's where we go create from, right? So it's powerful, but it's calm as fuck. It's passionate, it's energetic, and at the same time, it's calm as fuck because it's focused and clear. That's the energy. All right, number 10, the last one on the list, dare to be a leader, all right? Dare to be a leader. So I had this thing in my head that like being a leader means that you say that you're better than others, and that's wrong. There's nothing wrong with saying that you're better than others. Like nobody's better than anyone at a spiritual level, but everybody's better than others in some practical levels, right? I'm better at coding than my wife, for example. She's better at dancing than I am, right? Like there's nothing wrong with being better than others at certain things. There's nothing wrong with being further along some development journey than other people. But I was so afraid of saying that I was better than anyone that I didn't dare to be a leader. Dare be to be a leader. Like you be stepping up and being a leader is a giant service to others. It's you volunteering to do a service to others. People are looking for a leader. They need a leader. One of my favorite quotes was from, I heard this from Dan Kennedy. He quotes Werner Erhard. I've heard it attributed to others as well, but saying that most people walk around with their umbilical cord in their hands looking for somewhere to plug it in, right? They don't want to think for themselves. They don't want to take responsibility. They want to plug it in somewhere and attach themselves to a leader. You being that good leader that they can attach themselves to, like honor that's how they, where they're coming from. That's fine. Volunteer for that. Yeah, you can plug in your umbilical cord here. That's fine. Plug it in here and I will lead you. But what I will do is I will lead you back to yourself. That's my mission. I will lead you right back to yourself, to loving yourself, to seeing yourself, to valuing yourself, to thinking for yourself, to trusting yourself, to believing in yourself, to seeing yourself the way that God sees you. That's what I want to do. That's my journey for you. Right. And so, you know, have the courage to step up and be that leader of your tribe and just own it. Own that you're better. Own that you've done this. You've done the work. You've earned it. You put in the work and the effort. You've earned it. Now go lead and serve people in that way. All right, people, I'm going to wrap it up here. That was what I had for you today. 10 things that I would tell my 10-year-ago version of me. So I think I'm going to be building YouTube. So go follow me on YouTube, go subscribe on YouTube if you watch this. And I'm going to put this in a podcast as well. I'm putting together the whole Content Machine. I'm going to do a future video about the Content Machine as well. And I'm doing this like for context for those of you that are interested. The reason I'm doing these lives is not to get a bunch of live viewers. I'm doing it to get the content out there that I can then repurpose as ads. And I can build up the Content Machine, and then I can repurpose this, and I can take this into 10 different, so like semi long form clips, and I can do a bunch of short form clips, and I can distribute that all of the social medias and build that Content Machine, because Content Machine, putting out content is king. Like you absolutely want to do that. And I've had a couple of false starts, and now I feel like I've got it now. We're doing this. I know what I'm doing. And the reason I had the false starts was I felt wrong. So everything came tainted with this energy of feeling wrong, which is why I'm so passionate about that. I want to teach everybody to not buy into their own pattern of inadequacy. I want to see you as whole and complete and already perfect, even though you're still on the journey and learning, as we all are and always will be, and just put out great fucking content that serves your people. That's what they need. Most people don't do it. You and I, we're going to be the ones that do. All right. Love you. Talk soon.